Let's see.
Delusions run strong on this podcast. Rish Outfield has them. I have them. Our guests have them. If you listen long enough, you will have delusions too.
The Journey Into Podcast is proud to present This Journey Into Star Wars, featuring numerous delusions of grandeur.
Welcome, one and all, to another Journey Into Star Wars. We have another Delusions of Grandeur episode for you. We're here to talk Star Wars of the past and of the future and things that are going on right now. My name is Marshall Latham, and here with my illustrious co-host, Rish Outfield.
Hey there.
Hey.
Hello there. It seems like it's been a long time since we got together. Has it?
Or? Yeah, it's been a little while, longer than we had anticipated getting together. But it did give us a chance to put out the Women in X-Wing episode that we recorded with Big and Renee. So that worked out pretty good.
Yeah, that ended up being almost a full episode length on its own. And we recorded it just during the same session as Rogue One. And so, yeah, it's cool that that got to be an episode.
Hey, and one thing I did want to thank you for. You do the lion's share of the editing of our conversations for the podcast, and I don't think I've given you your due here on the air, so appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you posting the episodes. Since we've gotten together, there's been so much news about this Han Solo movie.
Oh, yeah. I know. I keep thinking, oh, we got to talk about that.
And yeah, I don't know what to say, because it was about a year ago when there was all this news about Rogue One.
Right.
Being in trouble and them bringing in Tony Gilroy to direct, and, you know, what happened to Gareth Edwards and how much are they going to reshoot? And Disney didn't like the footage. And yeah, it was too much. Too adult or not connected enough to the rest of the Star Wars universe, and they're going to do this, they're going to ruin it, and here we are, almost to the rerun of that.
It is.
With Han Solo, although this one seems a little bit more serious, because the directors of the Han Solo movie, which still doesn't have a title, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't just call it Solo, a Star Wars story.
Wasn't that on the clipboard or something when they started filming? Didn't they have something like that with a red Solo cup or something? There was some joke about that. I can't remember.
What are those guys' names?
They are
Phil Lord, I want to say.
Yeah, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller is who the directors were.
So Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, those were the guys that did the Lego movie, 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street. Seems like there was something else they did that was... Maybe I don't know.
No, that's the big ones that they've worked on. They've been successful. I think they did some TV work. But I don't know, when I look at those guys, and I don't think they're much younger than I am, but they look really young as far as directors go. You know, I don't know if this has become such a more publicized reshifting of a movie for the Star Wars because they've made a bigger deal out of it, or people are bigger fans of them than they are of Gareth Edwards, why it's such a higher profile story than the other stuff. I mean, of course, all the Star Wars nerds like us, you know, we were paying attention to what was going on with Rogue One and hearing all those things. But this one seems to go kind of beyond just the fan base as far as people talking about it.
Well, yeah, that it seems more serious than the others.
Yeah.
Like Michael Arndt got his name on The Force Awakens. Gareth Edwards is the director, the nominal director of Rogue One. But as far as I know, these guys have been removed from the project.
Yeah.
They're no longer involved. And then Ron Howard has been brought in very publicly to
yes.
continue the film, to complete the film, to reshape the film. We don't know exactly. And that's the thing with this. Oh, and there was one more I didn't mention. Josh Trank was going to be director of episode 8, The Last Jedi. And he was replaced.
Was it 8 or was it the Boba Fett movie that they were talking about?
No, it was the one that comes out this December.
Okay, it was that one. Okay.
And he got replaced by Rian Johnson, I want to say. Does that sound right?
Yep.
And so every single one has had one of these things happen on it, but we don't know exactly what happened with Michael Arndt, and we don't know exactly what happened with Gareth Edwards. And with Josh Trank, was it just somebody at Disney or at Lucasfilm saw that Fantastic Four movie before it came out and said, oh, nope, this is not our guy? We don't know.
Well, I think there was some of that, but I think he got let go actually before Fantastic Four came out. And there was a lot of stories and rumors coming out about, you know, how he was not doing well and having arguments and being, you know, hard to work with or whatever toward the end of that. Maybe there were some people at Sony that knew people at Lucasfilm and all that kind of stuff. I don't know.
That would have been Fox on that one, but...
Oh, right. Yeah.
But the point I was trying to make is we never really know the full story. You know, Gareth Edwards, why did he not do the reshoots of Rogue One, and how much changed and how much was out of his control and his vision of the movie? Was that what we saw last December, or did that get taken out of his hands and it's sort of his vision with somebody else's or completely somebody else's? I mean, it behooves these guys not to speak negatively about a multi-billion dollar organization owned by a trillion dollar organization. But, you know, these are things where I would like to know what's going on with this. And I've heard several stories about Lord and Miller having a sort of a jokey concept of the film, and that they were used to just winging it, you know, getting on the set and saying, go and okay, yeah, hey, let's try this. Oh, that's a good idea. Let's do that. And that Kathleen Kennedy and Kasdan didn't like that way of doing things. But if that were the case, why not replace them immediately? Why not replace them after 2 weeks or a week or a month or 2 months?
Yeah.
Why wait until it was this far into the process? And maybe they were on, you know, ultra secret probation and they'd been brought into Kennedy's office 3 or 4 times. Just like, hey, you know, you guys did it again, or you're going over, or the budget or the script, or that we don't like the dailies or whatever it is. And finally she's like, well, I'm just not getting through to these guys. We got to replace them. Or, you know, maybe they planned on replacing them a long time before and, you know, the news slipped out, some spy or something. The thing that's weird is we never really find out until somebody down the line writes a tell-all book, or they actually make a documentary, the true Hollywood story of the Han Solo movie. We don't get to know what's going on. And, you know, they announced their firing, and then immediately Ron Howard was announced, I'd say like within 3 days, as replacing them.
Oh, yeah, it was quick.
How long ahead of time were they courting Ron Howard? And then when this movie finally comes out, are Lord and Miller's names going to be on it anywhere? If they've shot a significant portion of the movie as directors, then the Directors Guild says, hey, these guys deserve credit. You know, I think the most famous example is Superman 2, when Richard Lester was brought in. The Directors Guild said, you know, Richard Donner did this movie. The only way that we will not give Richard Donner credit is if 51% of the finished film was not directed by Richard Donner. And so Lester went as far as to reshoot scenes that had already been shot just so that it would make the percentage in his favor.
Wow.
But yeah, you can't have Ron Howard come in and shoot for a month and then it's, say, a Ron Howard film.
90% of the film. Yeah, and I don't, from what I got, from what I've heard from him, that's not his intent either. He's just kind of he's there to do the best he can to make what they want kind of thing. But I think Lord and Miller did come out with some statements after everything went down. And, you know, their complaint was that they were being, you know, watched over and all these things were being questioned, and they wanted to have other people come in and do stuff. And they just, either they were going to be the directors and in charge, or they weren't going to do it. Where, you know, maybe Gareth Edwards kind of had more of a level, because he was involved in it up into the end, and even in the promotion of the movie and everything, you know, he wasn't just gone. He was still in support of everything. So maybe, you know, he was willing to let others come in and collaborate. He probably might have felt a little bit put out. But, you know, these guys just pretty much, it was my way or their way or the highway. And that's what Lucasfilm felt as well. And, you know, I think Lawrence Kasdan probably has a lot of personal stake in this too. You know, he wrote the script and wanted them to stick to the script. And, you know, he's been around, as you know, since the beginning. Well, maybe not the very beginning, but pretty close. So, in my opinion, I'm almost relieved. You know, the more I heard about Lord of Miller, you know, I enjoyed the Lego movie. I haven't seen the 21 Jump Street movies. But, you know, those are comedies, you know, and I was kind of a little bit worried about, I mean, this is Han Solo, you know, this is the legacy of Harrison Ford and the Star Wars original trilogy that we, you know, revere and whatever. And I was a little bit nervous about people just kind of coming in and, you know, running a little bit too loose with it. And, you know, I guess with Ron Howard on there, I feel pretty confident that he would do good by the source material and everything else. And maybe that's just an age thing. You know, I hear a lot of stuff from younger people that are like, well, you know, it would be good to get new energy into Star Wars and to let these guys put their take on the universe. And I understand where that's coming from. And I support that. You know, you can't, if you stifle things too much, then it just becomes a generic thing. But, you know, people have been saying that same thing about the Marvel universe. And it hasn't gone down too bad yet. I mean, maybe Iron Fist was a little bit of a slip in the gears, but, you know, that's a totally different enterprise. That's not the Marvel movies. That's the Netflix ones. But I don't know. Do you feel a little bit better about the outcome of this with Ron Howard in there? Or do you feel that these guys should have been left to their own way of doing things?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because I have almost none of the pieces. Now, I hadn't heard Lord and Miller's complaint that they were being overseen too much, but it just, you see, I don't have a problem with the idea of a comedic Han Solo movie. It just, I mean, I don't know what that script was like. I'm assuming the Kasdans wrote something that is faithful to Han as Kasdan wrote him in Empire and Jedi, but yeah, a young Han Solo movie should be fun.
Yeah.
And I don't, yeah. I don't know what the problem was. They always try not to go into detail in these things because, you know, you end up burning bridges when you say so-and-so was drunk all the time. So-and-so wouldn't come out of their trailer. I don't know if that was the right choice or not. I do like Ron Howard. He's a reliable filmmaker, although that could sound like a criticism. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I'm all for humor. I mean, I love the humor in Star Wars, and you know, a young Han Solo is a great opportunity for some good humor and cocky behavior and things like that. But you could take that too far, and you know, become what is it, Seth? Not Seth Meyers, but
Seth MacFarlane.
No, he did Green Hornet and The Interview.
Seth Rogen,
yeah. That might be a little too far for, unless, you know, if that was the setup of the movie to begin with, but I don't know. That would be kind of hard to envision for a Han Solo kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, they haven't really let us down yet with one of these movies, but I think Lucasfilm, though, kind of needs to figure out what they want and who they want before they get so far down this road. If this is becoming a pattern, it's going to be an issue. the money might be pretty enticing, but you know, if Lucasfilm does this on a regular basis, people might not want to work on their movies.
Well, yeah, nobody wants their hands tied when they come on board a project, and nobody wants to be constantly looked over the shoulder of and second guessed. But these are more than just movies. These are tent poles. These are an industry. There's a legacy. It is the franchise. And with Kevin Feige over at Marvel, anytime you'd hear somebody complain about, well, you know, he had this vision and wouldn't let me do what I wanted to do, I would side with Kevin Feige and say, well, yeah, but he's done 13 of these.
Right.
And they've all been good. And one of the things that makes them good is that they take place in the same universe. You know, at this point, Kevin Feige has earned my loyalty.
Yeah. You know, it's very similar to, you know, what we saw with Ant-Man, with kind of everything that went down there. But I thought that turned out pretty well, you know. You know, one of the bones of contention there was having Falcon come in, you know, for that scene where he goes to the Avengers mansion to get that piece of equipment or whatever. You know, I'm sure that wasn't in the original screenplay. I thought it was a great scene, you know, and I thought it tied it together pretty well with the other Marvel movies. And I'm sure that was all from Feige and everything else. So like you said, yeah, he's kind of earned our trust there.
See, we'll never see the Edgar Wright version of Ant-Man. We'll never know if it was better.
Right.
Or if it felt totally different. You know, when people talk about David Lynch almost directed Return of the Jedi, well, yeah, that might have been great.
Wow.
It might have been terrible. We'll never know because we don't live in a universe where that happened. Anyway, same thing with this Han Solo movie. We'll never know whether Lord and Miller had the right idea and it was an injustice that they got tossed out. We'll never know what a fully Ron Howard production would have been like. We're going to end up with something in the middle. I feel affection and gratitude toward Lawrence Kasdan. And then I was talking to my cousin. I said, look up Kathleen Kennedy sometime. See what movies she has under her belt. I mean, this woman has done amazing, awesome things. She has earned our loyalty as well. But maybe I don't know, maybe that's not open-minded enough, but I just, the point where she is CEO of this gigantic film company, she didn't get there because she's somebody's niece or somebody's wife.
Right.
She got there because look at what she has accomplished. Look what movies she, the Flintstones notwithstanding, look at the great movies she has produced. And so you got to give her some benefit of the doubt because of that.
Well, and like I said, I've been pleased with, you know, The Force Awakens, with Rogue One. I mean, there's little tidbits of those, you know, you might nitpick or whatever. But on the whole, I mean, I've been very pleased with the new Star Wars movies that have come out. So, you know, I guess until they lose my trust, I'm willing to go with Lucasfilm and their take on it.
Okay, well, that sounds like the final word there. I hear you, and I mean, it's not like we can affect it one way or another. We're just in it for the long haul. We're already strapped in, and we're going wherever this ship is taking us. So, one thing that I was disappointed in, and I remain disappointed, is that they didn't postpone the movie when this happened. I thought, okay, you know what, guys, they're going to bump it. They're going to give it 6 months, and it'll come in December, just like the others have. And that's good. We want them to come out every December.
And it still might.
But it's still supposed to be May 2018, which is less than a year now.
Yeah. I guess it worked out with Rogue One, but that seems like a pretty crunch time for adding in all these additions or whatever, if that's what they're doing. I don't know. It still might happen. They still might delay it until December. I really don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know either. Maybe we'll never get an answer on that either. But there's no chance Rogue One and Force Awakens would have made more money had they been released in May rather than in December. So I don't think it's money.
Yeah.
Maybe it is, though. Maybe they think, well, you know, if kids are out of school for 3 months, we release it in May. Kids are going to go again and again. They can't really go again and again when it's in December. But I don't know.
Or they just want to reclaim May as the month of Star Wars kind of thing. I don't know.
And I can understand that for tradition's sake. But after just two movies and then we get another one this December, I'm totally used to December being Star Wars month now. And I'm fine with it.
Well, isn't episode 9, isn't that still slated for 2019?
I think it's December 2019, yeah. But who knows at this point?
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to go 6 months in between episode 8 and the Han Solo movie, and then we won't have anything for a year and a half. That seems kind of... Now that they've set this pattern of every year we get a movie, that'll be in.
Well, you're convincing to me. I mean, that's all I'd need to hear. Is, oh, wow, it's going to be a year and a half and only 6 months in between. Okay, yeah, let's fix that. But I don't know. They have some kind of plan. They have a reason for doing this. I just, I don't know what it is. We can't predict the future.
Well.
Oh, I think that's what this episode was supposed to be about.
Yeah, I think we might be able to make some predictions about... what we expect to see in the Han Solo movie. So, yeah, each of us have kind of come up with a few things that we predict will be part of the Han Solo movie. And, you know, we could be right, we could be wrong. That's kind of the fun of speculating. And, you know, some of these I added for humor, or at least part of it. But I'm also serious about what I think will happen. So...
Okay, so announce it again that these are five... things that I predict will happen in the Han Solo movie, right?
That's correct. Yep.
And I haven't read your list. Have you read mine?
I think I read it a while ago, but I don't remember what you said. So.
Okay. Is that memorable? But I'm just wondering if we might have the same items or...
Well, I don't know. We'll find out.
Because you know what they say about great minds.
That's true. They do think alike.
A terrible thing to waste.
Yeah, I'll start off here. So my first prediction of what will be in the Star Wars movie is I think since it's earlier in the timeline, well, I guess not earlier than the prequels, but earlier than the original trilogy in Rogue One, I think we'll see a character from Rogue One show up as either a cameo or a guest spot on Han Solo. It could even be an adolescent Bor Gullet.
Oh, no. How would you know if it was adolescent?
It would be smaller. It'd be like the little baby Jabba on the Clone Wars movie.
Oh, wow. Just when I thought you couldn't get worse than reminding me of Bor Gullet. Stinky the Hutt, ladies and gentlemen.
Stinky the Hutt, that's right. No, I don't think it would be Bor Gullet, but it could be somebody from Rogue One since... They definitely won't show up after Rogue One. So,
yeah, well, see, I was surprised that we didn't get young Han Solo.
That it wasn't the other way around, where Han Solo showed up in Rogue One somehow?
Well, that was something that I had been talking to Big about when we were hearing about all these reshoots, and they were going to try and, you know, beef up a certain Dark Lord's part and things like that. I was like, oh, you know, now that they've cast... I can't remember his name. I wanted to say Anton Eldritch, but that's not his name.
It's something close to that, though.
But now that they've cast Han Solo, it's like they need to get a cameo with that guy in there. Just so that when he shows up in his own movie, he'll be like, oh, and we'll already know. But yeah, they didn't go for that. And it's smart that they didn't, because that movie is 3 minutes before Star Wars begins. So for him to look like someone else, that's not going to work. Although he could have been in that first scene that takes place when Jin is a kid.
Oh, yeah.
He could have been Saw Gerrera's co-pilot or something like that. Kid Han Solo.
Oh, Saw Gerrera, yeah.
Lies! Anyway, my first prediction is that we see Han make the Kessel Run in under 13 parsecs. That's how he makes a name for himself.
And I
don't know if that's cool or not, but it's something I'm predicting we may see in the Han
Solo. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Now, would that be in the Millennium Falcon, or would that be in another ship?
No, it's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
Oh,
so it
right.
has to be the
That's
Falcon.
Right.
My number two is, obviously, Han wins the Falcon from Lando.
Oh, yeah.
Or, if they have self-control in this movie, he sees the ship and wishes it were his. Heck, this one is so obvious, like the life debt with Chewbacca. Maybe I shouldn't even count it. So, pretend I never said that one, and I'll have another number two, all right?
Well, you know, that would be kind of neat to parallel that with, you know, when Lando takes over the Millennium Falcon and Return of the Jedi, and Han Solo kind of looks at it before he leaves and just worried that he's not going to see her again kind of thing. You could kind of work that in.
Oh, Lando does the same thing?
Lando does the same thing, or when Han sees it for the first time, you know, he's like, oh... You know, it'd be kind of like a similar stage scene or something like that. That'd be kind of cool. Well, my number two kind of goes along with your number one, where I just say we see the spice mines of Kessel.
Yeah, that sounds like, I mean, I we don't know anything about it except for the 3PO doesn't want to be sent there.
Right.
Right?
Well, isn't there something where don't the Wookiees work the spice mines of Kessel too? I mean, isn't that where a lot of the Wookiees were enslaved to do that kind of thing? I can't remember. It seems like I remember that from something. Maybe it was a legacy book or something.
Well, yeah, all of that stuff would be legacy now, I would think. But, yeah, that's a good way to introduce Kessel, the Kessel Run, and the slavery of the Wookiees.
Chewbacca, maybe, you know, maybe that's where Han saves Chewbacca from or something.
Yeah, and like I said, it's such a given that Han, you know, first meets Chewie and saves Chewie, that I'd just be blown away if they didn't do it.
Right.
My number two is Han starts out pretty generous and trusting and is betrayed, teaching him that he can only count on himself and that there's no profit in being a hero.
Hmm.
Actually, this could be the whole point of a movie like this. The only person I know I can depend on is you, Chewie. No way, pal. From now on, it's just me and you against the universe.
Yeah, I could totally see that. That could be his total arc through the whole show. That could fall right in line with, you know, Woody Harrelson's character, supposedly going to be Han's mentor, but if he screws him over or whatever, that could definitely be an inspiration for his being the Lone Star out in the galaxy there.
See, that's the fun thing about the potential of a story like this is they could take it in any direction they want. They could have Han, from the moment we see him, be the Han that we met in the cantina in Star Wars, or they could have him be a totally different character and say, okay, we're going to have him be funny, we're going to have him be naive, we're going to have him be a dreamer. We can have him be a risk taker. We can have, you know, any number of ways and say, you know, eventually he's going to become the Han Solo we know.
Yeah.
Like I said, with self-control, if they're planning on doing two or three Han Solo movies, if they've signed this guy to play Han in a trilogy of movies, then they don't have to eat all of the banquet in this first movie. There can still be a ways to go. You can show Han learning to speak Wookiee, you know, knowing that we've got two more movies in which he can finally, you know, he and Chewie have this great bond.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he could even be loyal to the Empire at the beginning, you know, because I believe he was a member of the Imperial something at one point, wasn't he? He was in the Academy or...
Well, that's how it used to be, yeah. That's how he happened to be there when he saw the mistreatment of the Wookiees and decided, I don't want to be part of this organization.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they can either keep that or toss it out. because, you know, it's not set in stone anymore. But I always liked that idea. I liked the idea of, you know, he changed allegiances because he saw the corruption of the empire. What's your number two, man? Three, sorry.
Well, my number three prediction is that Jabba the Hutt will definitely be referenced in the movie, but probably not seen.
Interesting. My number four is about that.
Oh.
My number four is Han gets his first smuggling job and or first works for Jabba. I'm not sure how their relationship would start out. Obviously the, and I put this in quotes, deleted scene in Star Wars has a very different dynamic between Han and Jabba than we see in Jedi. But when they first meet, maybe Jabba needs a good smuggler more than he needs to appear threatening and dangerous. Maybe he actually takes Solo under his wing and... Nah, that doesn't seem likely. Jabba could, in a franchise without an Emperor or Vader, be the big scary bad guy that everybody on every world is afraid of.
You know, it could be something too where, like, just at the end of the movie, you know, where it's kind of Han and Chewie starting out on their own. You know, somebody gives them a tip. Hey, this Jabba the Hutt is looking for some smugglers. And then, you know, Han just kind of looks at Chewie and says, well, we can give that a shot or something like that.
And that's how you end the movie? Is knowing
and that's how you end the movie.
You know, where it's going.
Yeah.
I like that. I loved stuff like... I mean, the best example ever is that playing card of the Joker at the end of Batman Begins.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are more stories to tell, and you guys know what this means, even if they don't.
That was a good scene, you're right. Escalation, right?
So I just gave my number four, so I guess we're back to you.
Oh, okay. My number four is not too exciting, but I picture the opening scene of the movie being at a Sobek table where Han's gambling. And I don't know whether it would be with Lando or just kind of him in a bar playing Sobek with somebody. I just kind of like that scene. Or like that image.
That visual.
Of how to start out. Yeah, that visual of starting out the movie that way.
I like it too. We don't know anything about that game, right?
No, not really.
We don't know if it involves dice or cards or some kind of roulette type wheel or, you know.
Well, no, I think it is cards because I think there was in the first season of Rebels, when Lando first came on, he was playing Sobek.
Okay.
And I think it was like a card game kind of thing.
Well, let's talk briefly about that. If Lando is introduced as another Sobek player, do you have them be rivals? Do you have them already know each other? I mean, are Han and Lando best friends? Or is Lando just a guy that Han knew and he happens to run into again at the end of Empire Strikes Back? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a story there. I mean, I think they at one point they definitely were friends, maybe even partners in certain things. But at the beginning of the movie, I don't know, you know, maybe that's, we see that friendship start or that partnership start, and somewhere along the line, you know, the Millennium Falcon comes into play.
I like the idea that they aren't friends, that they're rivals. You know, there's like this guy Calrissian is the best Sobek player in this system, and so he's the guy we need to take down. And then eventually they're sort of forced to work together or forced to acknowledge each other's talents. But again, I don't know if they're just planning on one Han Solo movie and that's it, or if they're saying, gosh, you know, we could be doing these Han Solo movies for 15 years. Heck, Donald, how would you like to play Lando Calrissian for the next 20 years? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We'll give him his own spin-off movies. I have no idea.
And maybe they're just waiting to see what the response is for this movie, and then they'll make their, you know, set aside room for it, for sure. See how this movie goes, and then if it's a big success, then they can continue on with future Han Solo movies.
Well, yeah, hopefully they have taken a cue from Marvel Studios, who, you know, signed Robert Downey Jr. way back and then ended up paying Robert Downey Jr. a gargantuan amount of money because they didn't have a lot of foresight. And so now every single one of these guys, you know, that gets signed to a multi-film contract.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, Tom Holland, you'll be playing Spider-Man until you're as old as Tobey Maguire was. What? No. And so, yeah, I would hope that they signed all these guys for potential Han Solo sequels up the wazoo. And
yeah.
But it seems like you and I, though, once talked about that and you said, oh, geez, I hope they don't make a whole bunch of Han Solo movies. Huh. Do you remember saying that? Are you saying that you didn't want him to get in a rut of just making that kind of stuff? Or is that a dream?
Yeah, I might have said something like that. I guess maybe I'm more amenable to it at this point, but I wouldn't want to see them planning trilogies unless you know, there was room for it. But yeah, if this movie is good and the chemistry is good between the actors, yeah, I think it'd be great to see at least another one.
Yes, I don't know the guy that's playing Han. I did see, what was the Coen Brothers movie that he did? Hail Caesar?
This is a Star Wars podcast.
I don't even know his name. No, I did see Hail Caesar, and I paid attention because by the time I saw that, he was already going to be Han Solo. I just hope that I see him and I like him and go, yeah, oh, wow, I can't wait to see more movies with this guy as Han Solo, instead of comparing him in the back of my mind to Harrison Ford, which is just death. You don't want to do that. You know, Harrison Ford, he you know, it's kind of like Sean Connery as James Bond. You can't compare every one of these Bonds to Connery. They have to be their own person. You have to just like the movie on its own merits and not saying, oh, how would Connery have done on His Majesty's Secret Service? I hope I'm able to do that, to just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you know, when you think of it, this is probably one of their riskiest moves to take somebody that's been, you know, I mean, it's an obvious thing to try to do, but it is kind of risky to try to replace Harrison Ford as Han Solo.
Well, let's go back in time to 1992, just for a minute. Did you have any problem with, was it Sean Patrick Flannery and Corey Carrier as young Indiana Jones?
No.
Did you watch that show when it was on? Did you have a bunch of friends that said they wouldn't watch it because it wasn't Harrison Ford?
No. I kind of rolled with that one. I liked it. I didn't have any problems with him being young Indiana Jones. And I guess I didn't have a lot of friends that to talk about that with.
Well, thank goodness the internet didn't exist back then, because I'm sure we would have heard it.
But oh, yeah.
I knew from the very beginning that it wasn't going to be Harrison Ford. And especially with like the little kid version, it's like, yeah, well, you know, who cares that this one is blonde even.
Right.
And hopefully I can do the same with this Han Solo movie. I fear it's going to be a little harder because he's already a grown up.
Well, yeah. And with Indiana Jones, you know, we'd already seen the younger version in The Last Crusade. I mean, it was definitely different than the Sean Patrick Flattery version, but, you know, we were already kind of prepared for, hey, this, he was doing adventuring when he was just a kid, you know, so for him to extend that into that series, which I liked that series. I don't think I've watched every single episode, but I've watched quite a few of them, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't see it all either. We had ABC, but we didn't. I think it went on to the Family Channel after that first season.
Yeah.
And so I never did see the one where Harrison Ford played Indy. I think it was called Indiana Jones and the Hollywood Follies was the one with Ford. I never saw it, and
I've seen that scene, but I don't think I saw it as a when it was, you know, coming out. I don't think I've seen that whole episode, but I've seen that scene where he's in there. But yeah, with Star Wars and Han Solo, yeah, it's going to be tough not to make that comparison, especially with, you know, The Force Awakens is only I guess, 2 years old at this point. So,
well, I'm going to try not to. I'm going to try not to judge him against Ford, you know, in the same way as if they had the Swedish girl or whoever played Leia in that final scene of Rogue One before they created that CG abomination. If it had just been that girl, you know, I'd just be like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. She's the new Leia. I'm fine with that. I don't know. I like to think that I would be able to do that.
Yeah, because, you know, I think recasting is definitely, you'd have to do that with this Han Solo. Another side question for you. Did you ever see Age of Adeline?
I didn't.
Oh, that's a pretty good show. I mean, it's totally different, of course.
But people talk about the guy who played young Harrison Ford in that as just being perfect. I know a bunch of people were actually bummed that he didn't get the Han Solo job.
Yeah, I thought he was a pretty good Harrison Ford. He definitely looked like him quite a bit, and he didn't have a lot of, you know, acting to do. I mean, there were some scenes with him and the younger Adeline, and but not, you know, he didn't get to shine or whatever. But I thought he was very passable and did a good job of being a young Harrison Ford. And I was kind of thinking that same thing, that he would be coming on as the young Han Solo, but.
I don't know either. Something tells me we'll talk about this when the movie comes out too. is how dark was the shadow of Harrison Ford hanging over this movie? And hopefully not too dark.
Hopefully not. Yeah.
Hopefully it's overcast that night. My next prediction is another one of those just throwaway ones. It's Han tells somebody he loves her, him, it, and they say, I know. The prequels loved ruining classic lines this way.
Yeah, that would probably be a groaner if they did that, for sure.
I hope they don't.
Yeah.
But I predict that they do.
So it's the reverse, right, is what you're saying, is where the girl says that to him rather than him saying that, right?
Yeah, well, I
yeah. Yeah, that would...
Don't want that to happen. Maybe we'll strike this one from the list as well. It's one of those better left unsaid.
Well, yeah, I guess they shouldn't all be, you know, we could be predicting the things that we wouldn't like to see in the movie. So my last prediction here is kind of just a wish. And, you know, it could just be a throwaway line or, you know, them talking about something, but... My prediction is that Star's End will be one of the locales in the movie.
I just Han Solo at Star's End.
At Star's End.
Brian,
yeah.
Brian Daly book.
Yeah. I used to love those books when I was a kid. I don't really remember the plot of those. I just remember it was, you know, Han and Chewie out on adventures doing stuff. They might be terrible. But just a shout out to Star's End. It wouldn't have to follow the plot or anything. It would just be something like that. You know, maybe that beginning scene at the Sobek table would be on Star's End or something like that. That'd be a pretty cool nod, I think, to those books. But people might not even remember those.
No, but that's one of those deep cuts for the longtime fans.
Yeah.
Something that just goes over the heads of most folks. But those that get it go, oh, wow.
Yeah. I think that'd be, did you read those too?
I did. I was a little young. I remember, was Star's End the first one? I thought Han Solo's Revenge was the first one I read.
Han Solo at Star's End was the first novel in that trilogy of books. And then it was Han Solo's Revenge. And then I can't remember what the third one was.
Our one listener is going,
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you know what the third one was called.
Let us know in the forums and on the email and all those things. There was also a trilogy of Lando Calrissian books.
I never read the Lando ones.
I had it and I started to read them. I don't know if I ever finished them. I wasn't as excited about those as the Han Solo ones.
I was just too young. I had such a hard time getting through Han Solo's Revenge. And if it was really the second book, maybe that explains why I had a hard time getting through it, because I didn't start on the first book. I probably would enjoy reading them now, but it's a whole lifetime ago.
Yeah, I did. I can't remember how long ago it was. A few years ago, I did go back and read Splinter in the Mind's Eye, and that it's just fun because it's so compared to what you know we've seen since. It's pretty campy and corny and bad, but it's still fun to look back at that and say what if kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I read Splinter of the Mind's Eye as a kid, and then I read it again as an adult, knowing what it was, knowing that this was the sequel to Star Wars that Lucas hired Alan Dean Foster to write.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was what might have been had Star Wars not been this gargantuan blockbuster. And in that way, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everybody should read Splinter of the Mind's Eye, I
think. Yeah. Okay, what's your last prediction?
It's not great, but it's a weird foreshadow of being frozen in carbonite. Solo, they say the Hutts sometimes freeze disobedient operatives in that stuff. Wow, if that's ever an option for Chewie and me, I say just shoot us. So again, just a joke, one of those, you know, the best one of those I can think of was in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where they find all those markers leading to various artifacts. And she says, what's this one? And he says, that's the Ark of the Covenant. And she says, are you sure? And he goes, pretty sure.
That's good,
and
though.
John Williams plays the Ark theme just for like 4 seconds in that shot. And it's just, oh gosh, I love that so, so much that it's sort of a throwaway line, but you know, again, we get it.
Good stuff there. Yeah, I mean, I hope they do some things like that, some nods to the audience without it being a wink, you know, like where they could look at the camera and say, you get it? But just, we can get it.
That sort of thing is difficult because you have to know where the edge is, where too far is, and where, you know, something is too subtle. And the Han Solo movie, like I said, could be any number of takes on the character. But it seems like writing a good Han Solo movie would be easier than writing a Star Wars Episode 7 or Episode 8 or Episode 9. You just come up with a rollicking adventure for this character that we already love, but you have none of the baggage of the previous films because, you know, it takes place before.
Right.
And as far as I know, it's just Han and Chewie and Lando that we know, and everybody else we don't know.
Yeah, new characters.
And so that might be totally fun too. I hope there are a couple of characters that we latch on to, a couple of characters we're like, oh gosh, I'd love to see this guy again. I'd love to see so-and-so have their own movie.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I'm expecting good things. It'll be interesting. Yeah, just another thought I had. This isn't a real prediction, but an alternative plot for the movie could be like a Smokey and the Bandit in space kind of movie.
You say that and you laugh, but that's totally a valid interpretation of who Han is.
Yeah.
You know, instead of what kind of car was it?
The Trans Am.
The Bandit's Trans Am. He's got this faster than light starship that nobody can catch.
Yeah.
That everybody knows there. Everybody's got their eyes open for this thing. And whoever could bring down the Millennium Falcon or bring down the Bandit is going to make a name of them for themselves. And it's just like, how long do you stay on top? How long can you stay one step ahead of the fuzz? And of course, we know that he pretty much goes his whole life. either that or you can say it stops once he gets frozen in carbonite.
For a time.
But I think that is totally a doable interpretation, a doable take on the Han Solo character.
Yeah. And that's
because, yeah, the Bandit
distracts everybody.
He was a lovable rogue.
Yeah.
But what he was doing was not... It was frowned upon by the law, and I think that's totally what Han... I mean, the stuff that he's smuggling, what was he smuggling? Is he running guns? You know, I think we'd heard that, you know, he's running spice.
Yeah.
What is spice? Is Han Solo a drug runner?
Maybe, yeah.
We don't know. It could be any number of things. And the fun of those bandit movies was, how is he going to escape? Or how is he going to get through this one? Oh, okay. You know, and the Dukes of Hazzard was very much, you know, a sort of a spinoff of Smokey and the Bandit in a way, you know, with the cops being corrupt and bad and cartoonish, and the Duke boys, you know, always being one step ahead. And, oh, you know, how will they get out of this one? I think they're probably second cousins to Han Solo.
I guess, yeah, I guess that could be done. Maybe they have to go to Arrakis.
That's where the spice comes from.
Yeah. A Star Wars Dune crossover.
Well, whenever you hear about spice, at least back in the old Star Wars books and stuff like that, you can't help but think about Dune.
Yeah.
And how influenced was George Lucas by Dune when he
wrote
Star Wars?
And Tatooine, you know?
Yeah, there are definitely some parallels there, some connections. And then, yeah, you've got that David Lynch almost ran, you know, where he chose to do a Dune adaptation instead of Return of the Jedi. Or anyhow, I don't imagine that it's Arrakis.
No. Yeah, Kessel, I think, has the claim to the spice on Star Wars. But yeah, so we'll see if those predictions come true or what goes down with that. But we'll have to look back on this after we see the movie and see if any of our predictions came true.
Yes, that sounds fun. And for the three people that are still listening, feel free to put your own predictions down.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be fun to see. Yeah, the movie is so close. I mean, if it sticks to its release date, then a year from the time this comes out, it'll almost be on video. So it'll be easy to come back here and say, okay, so-and-so predicted this. Wow, that actually happened.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kasdan predicted this. Wow, it's almost like he knew.
Is that Lawrence's son that helped co-write it?
I hope so. Otherwise, the joke doesn't work.
Yeah, LK predicted that.
And see, yeah, that's another thing. I mentioned Kathleen Kennedy earning our loyalty. But yeah, Lawrence Kasdan totally deserves any benefit of the doubt in my mind. You know, even if he hadn't written Raiders of the Lost Ark, just doing Empire and Jedi puts him right there in the driver's seat. And it's like, yeah, okay. If he says to jump, I'll say how high. Seems like you were probably a fan of Silverado too. And that was Lawrence Kasdan.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, I like Silverado.
I didn't take you as a Body Heat fan, but that was a really good movie too. It had that famous line, "You're not very smart." I like that in a man.
Who was in that?
That was Body William Heat. Hurt and Kathleen Turner.
Okay, I don't think I've seen that one, but yeah, I think I remember seeing it in the video store way back when.
Kasdan's done other stuff. It's just not coming to mind. I think everybody talks about Tombstone, but about the same time, he did a version of Wyatt Earp where he wrote and directed it.
Oh, with,
I want to say Kevin Costner.
Yes, Kevin Costner was in there. Yeah, that was kind of one of those Armageddon. Yeah.
Dueling asteroid movies?
Yeah, dueling asteroid movies.
Wait, what do you call them? Sorry.
Similar, I don't know. I don't call them. It's like Ants and Bug's Life, you know, coming out right at the same time.
Yeah, I always call them dueling asteroid films. Just because that was that year, 98, when Armageddon and Dante's Peak... Not Dante's Peak, what was it? Armageddon and Deep Impact both came out.
Deep Impact, yeah.
And it's like both of them were big tentpole films from their respective studios. Anyway, I feel like I've sidetracked us. I'm sorry. Why don't you take us out give...
Well, I did want to talk about one other thing.
Oh, okay.
Looking like Harrison Ford aside, who would you think is the Harrison Ford of today's movies? I was trying to come up with who I thought that would be. Not somebody to be young Han Solo that kind of looked like him, but kind of has that same charisma or that same feeling. I really can't think of anybody right now that kind of has that appeal. Can you?
Well, there was a lot of talk that Chris Pratt should take over.
Oh, right.
As Indiana Jones. And he's got a ton of charm, Chris Pratt. A lot of likability, sort of an affable relatability to him. But I've just never felt like, I mean, you believed Ford could beat somebody up, and I'm not sure that I've ever believed Chris Pratt could. But yeah, I guess if I had to pick somebody, I'd probably say Chris Pratt. Just, I really like that guy.
Well, and Star-Lord, you know, is definitely a good tribute to Han Solo, you know, as a character. Not a perfect analog, but definitely, you know, he's a rogue and a scoundrel and a fast rider kind of thing. But it got me thinking about back on the Journey Into episode. I was doing the Maltese Falcon and talking about Humphrey Bogart and how I kind of saw Harrison Ford as being kind of the Humphrey Bogart of our day. You know, they kind of had that same charm and charisma or whatever that I was just asking about nowadays. And I had you record a scene from Star Wars in the cantina of Bogart negotiating the Millennium Falcon and trying to think of analogs for Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke Skywalker from back in the 40s or whatever when they were actors. And I came up with Ed Wynn as kind of an older actor back then as being Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I couldn't really come up with a good person for Luke Skywalker. But when I asked you to record it and just, I think I said, just do Luke Skywalker in your own voice, you came up with a better answer to who would be the Luke Skywalker of the 1940s. And do you remember who that was?
I don't. I'm laughing, though.
You came up with Jimmy Stewart.
Okay, that sounds like me.
As being the Luke Skywalker. I kind of wanted to replay that scene here. I don't know, you know, how many people, well, even listen to this podcast, but...
Not enough.
Not enough, for sure. But may have not heard that on the Journey Into. So I was going to play that on the outro. It'll be the after credits scene for this episode for those that want to listen to that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I look forward to hearing it again myself, although now I'm worried how my Bogart was.
That was pretty good. And your Ed Wynn was right on key there. I don't know if you'd ever done Ed Wynn before I asked you to do that. But
no, but I don't imagine he's hard to do. Just saying, don't you know?
Yeah.
Makes it sound like Ed Wynn.
Yeah. So we'll finish off with that. But I guess any closing thoughts on the Han Solo movie? Or?
Well, I was about to say, well, it can't get here fast enough. And then I remembered that I wanted him to postpone it 6 months. So I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And yeah, I hope bringing in Ron Howard, you know, does what they want to do. You know, there was probably enough footage with Lord Miller in there of actually just the standard script. You know, maybe they were just experimenting after that. I don't know. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all that goes down with the promotion of the film, you know, the DVDs and all that kind of stuff to see, you know, if they just totally snub Lord and Miller on that or if they, you know, give him the credit. Because they definitely deserve credit for getting it as far as they did, regardless of any disagreements. So,
well, you know, they shot behind the scenes things on the set, you know, interviews with these guys talking about how it's going, and to just throw all that away sounds like a huge waste.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. Maybe you don't want to remind the viewers that there were originally these other guys. And you know, like on Back to the Future, for years, they were afraid to release the Eric Stoltz footage as Marty McFly.
Right.
And then finally, 25 years later or whatever, they're like, okay, here you go. We've had this in storage. And Stoltz said, do what you want. And so here it is. And it's fascinating.
It is, yeah.
To see a Marty McFly that's as tall as Biff is just disturbing too. But, you know, it's just that I'm glad that footage exists and we got to see it. And I mean, it's not like Lord and Miller are, you know, actors where we can see a scene with them in it, but you got to wonder what their attitude was during the day and what their filmmaking style was and how much of what we like in that movie next year is because of them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to leave people here. So I have been Rish Outfield telling you, keep your distance, but don't look like you're trying to keep your distance.
Good one. And this is Marshall Latham signing out saying, that's not the way the Force works.
Good night.
Good night. May the Force be with you.
Lies! Deceptions! Creative Commons license will save us. Attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives. Did you come here to sell my files? Oh, got it. Can see your thoughts. Do you think you can change them? Gullet will learn the truth. Share this with everyone. Save the journey. Save the dream.
Han Solo. I'm captain of the Millennium Falcon. Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed. If it's a fast ship.
Fast ship? You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon.
Should I have?
It's the ship that dreams are made of. It made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. I've outrun Imperial starships. Not the local bulk cruisers, mind you. I'm talking about the big Carillion ships now. She's fast enough for you, old man. What's the cargo?
Only passengers. Myself, the boy, two droids, and no questions asked.
What is it? Some kind of local trouble?
Let's just say we'd like to avoid any Imperial entanglements.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it? And it's going to cost you something extra. 10,000. In advance.
10,000? We could almost buy our own ship for that!
But who's going to fly it, kid? You?
You bet I could. I'm not such a bad pilot myself. We don't have to sit here and listen.
We could pay you 2,000 now, plus 15 when we reach Alderaan.
17, huh? Okay. You guys got yourself a ship. This could be the beginning of a beautiful friendship. We'll leave as soon as you're ready. Docking Bay 94.
94?